The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Larkin, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Kevin Ross presiding.
Good morning and welcome to this Court of Appeals for this October 13 panel for our second oral argument for today. The next case on for argument is the State of Minnesota versus Moyer. I will advise counsel, as you are aware, because you can see us, we are participating with using technology rather than being live in the courtroom. But even though we can see each other's faces and our names, we're only making an audio recording of the proceeding, which will be posted on the website. So please do state your name as you commence each leg of the argument so we can keep track of who's attached to which argument. Each side will have 15 minutes for your argument with an additional 5 minutes of rebuttal time for appellant's counsel. And if the technology has any glitchiness and you're having difficulty hearing or seeing, just alert us and we'll pause the proceedings and try to get the technology sorted out. With that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may.
Thank you. If it pleases the court, counsel, my name is Hillary Parsons and I'm here on behalf of appellant Michael Moyer. Now, this case involves a police officer who was very convinced that my client was engaged in something unlawful. And I believe in our petition or our arguments are based on the fact that he cut some constitutional corners in order to prove himself right. As you know, this case...
I understand you are not challenging either one of the traffic stops.
No, he had a basis for the stops. There were traffic violations. There were
so all you're challenging is the expansion of the traffic stop and challenging the conclusion that reasonable articulable suspicion supported bringing the dogs in.
That's correct. So it's a dual analysis. We have both the Terry that the scope of the stop must be related to the initial purpose for the stop, as well as the dog sniff cases saying under a totality of the circumstances, the officer has to have reasonable articulable suspicion in order to order that or request that dog sniff. So starting with...
If I understand, also taking a big picture approach, if I understand your argument correctly, you're also contending that even if the that the infirmities in the first expansion render the second expansion inappropriate on its face.
Well, I think there's two arguments for that second stop. First, that information and obtained as a result of the unlawful first stop was used to support that second stop. Furthermore, if you look at that second stop and when the officer requested that dog sniff, the only information he had at that point, and this is on page 55 of the transcript, and I think it's exceedingly important. He requested that dog sniff before he had any information as to this conversation with Chuck and the discovery of marijuana in Chuck's car. So Chuck told the officers that he had met with Mr. Moyer and was helping him get out of some issues with the cartel. So that was definitely used as part of the second stop ultimately, but this wasn't known to the officer when he requested that dog sniff. So I think that is the point in time when the constitutional violation took place. He was going to do that dog sniff regardless of what Chuck said.
And as to that second expansion of the stop, you make an assertion in your brief that I wanted to just see if I understood the basis of. It's on page 13, carrying over to page 14 of your brief. And you say that the people who claimed that he, meaning your client, was involved in dealing narcotics. These are the individuals who the officer says was a stop coming out of the house, had every reason to lie about their source. What's the basis for that assertion that they had every reason to lie about their source being your client?
To get out of trouble on their own, to try to pin it on something bigger. In my experience as a defense attorney, a lot of clients who get stopped or caught with minor drug amounts attempt to bring in information about their larger source. in order to try to avoid charges or even diminish charges. So we have no knowledge at all based on the testimony or what happened at that hearing as to whether any of that information was true.
Right, but they would have no particular reason to identify your client. Just they have a reason to identify someone.
Correct.
Okay. So, all right. I think I understand your argument.
And so, you know, unless there's more questions, I think this is going to become we're saying one thing, the prosecutor is saying another thing, and we're just going to keep going back and forth on what these things mean. So I just want to point out the significance. That first stop, there was very little actual information at that time when the officer expanded the scope. He had this idea that someone had gone to this gas station and they must be doing drugs or buying drugs or doing something with drugs because they didn't get gas. Now, corner stores at these gas stations are full of things that people go and buy: cigarettes, candy, milk. I mean, there's a myriad reasons to go into a gas station that have nothing to do with purchasing gas. So that immediate conclusion that something must have been afoot at that moment, and therefore you can expand the scope of that first stop, I think really puts light on the rest of what happened. This officer was so convinced he was right time and time again, and then he was just wrong time and time again. But then he just kept still stopping Mr. Moyer, convinced that Mr. Moyer was doing something wrong. And yes, ultimately he was correct. But this is a case where the ends absolutely do not justify the means. The Constitution was violated both with both stops on the basis of very little information. You know, stops under Terry have to be directly or very closely associated with the purpose for the stop, unless there is more information that allows for the expansion. That first stop, there wasn't information that allowed for that expansion, and they did get information that they used in order to do the second stop. They would have never have been in the position to see that text come in on the phone if he hadn't removed the cover from that phone to try to see if there were drugs in that car on that first stop. That text from that Chuck with the information about running aces definitely tainted what happened on that second stop, especially considering that most of the information used to justify the expansion of the second stop actually came in after the dog sniff was already requested. And unless there's additional questions, I would just like to, Judge Larkin.
Thank you. Does the record not indicate that the house from which your client was traveling was known as a house where there had been drug use or narcotic trafficking? And in fact, people had been arrested for those reasons coming from that home, and the police had had contact with your client based on drug use or drug suspicion and his connection with that home. So there's a little bit of background information that's relevant to the reasonable suspicion determination, yes?
Well, there is some background information, but just because someone lives or is part or associated with a known drug house doesn't justify stopping vehicles that go from and to that house for any reason. There was information in the record. The officer did testify that this was one of three houses he'd been watching, that there was known drug activity associated with them. But people who are coming from and to houses where they live, even if there is drug activity at that house, they get to go and come and go to and from their house, and they get to have people come from the gas station without it automatically leading to a search every time they leave that house. I'm not a fan of drug houses. I'm not saying this is a good thing. I'm just saying I don't. Yes, Your Honor.
Just to clarify then, the information that you would suppress as fruit of the illegal stop is the information that was obtained from the cell phone, because nothing else was found, right? So it's just, he was going to meet somebody at the casino.
There were two things that were found as a product of that first stop. The first was the text that came in on the cell phone as the officer was manipulating that cell phone. Number two was the cash. And there was some dispute in the record as to the amount of cash. There was $5,000, according to the officer, but he didn't collect it. He didn't take pictures of it, and nor did he mark down the exact amount. My client testified that there were $1,500. And again, this is something that's just as indicative of innocent activity. People bring cash to the casino. $1,500 is not that much to bring to Running Aces. It's a casino where people bring cash to try to win more cash, and they generally lose a lot of cash. But needless
to say, could you for a moment discuss the state's argument that even if one were to conclude that there was not a basis to do a dog sniff on the first stop, such that information regarding the amount of cash and that he was going to meet somebody at the casino cannot be considered in supporting the second stop, the second stop was nonetheless constitutionally valid?
I disagree. I disagree.
I assume so. Could you tell us why?
Even if you consider the information obtained as a result of the first stop, I think the key about that second stop is that, yes, this Chuck guy from the casino had been stopped and had given information that did support drug activity, but the officer who requested the dog sniff didn't have that information when he requested the dog sniff.
Did he have the information before the dog sniff began?
According to the transcripts, yes, he did.
Then does it matter, because we have to base our de novo determination of reasonable articulable suspicion on objective circumstances and not the officer's motivation?
Well, correct. But the time that the officer made the request for the dog sniff, the objective circumstances were such that there was not a basis for that dog sniff.
Right. But I think there's a distinction. I don't know that we look at the time he made the request, because if we do that as you're asking us to, we're examining the officer's motivation, as opposed, I think what we have to do is consider the totality of the circumstances at the time when the sniff begins, when the search begins. I mean, if an officer stops somebody and says, yeah, one way or another, I'm going to search this car, and at the end of the day, before the car is searched, there's probable cause for the search, I don't know that the law precludes the search based on the officer's expressed motives before the search?
That's a good question. That is a good question. I think when you look at what constitutional violations are meant to protect, they're protecting citizens from unlawful police activity.
And I mean, this is probably not fair to do to you, because I just got my notice of the Supreme Court decisions today, and there happens to be a Supreme Court case issued today at 10 o'clock having to do with the basis to expand Terry stops. And it's interesting because there is one dissenting justice who says we've now set the bar too low. We should be concerned about racial disparities infringing too greatly on drivers' rights, all the arguments you're making. But the majority stood firm to kind of establish law saying officer's motivation doesn't matter. It's based on an objective analysis of all the circumstances and a common sense, non-technical determination. So I don't know that the officers requesting the dog matters as much as you say it does. It seems like we should focus more on what was known at the time that dog arrived and started the sniff. But I could be wrong. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to address that.
And thank you. And I haven't seen that case as I was busily trying to log in at 10.
Of course not.
So you definitely have an advantage, and you saw my big frowny face, because this case.
Not really, because all the case says is we're not changing our standard for what constitutes a reasonable articulable suspicion to expand a traffic stop. I mean, that's a sense. And then it has the facts there were driver canceled, inimical to public safety, case of beer in the back seat. The officer could see the case of beer and that there were a couple cans missing. And he asked the driver, have you been drinking? So the facts aren't the same. It's not a dog sniff case, but on the law, the majority, you know, simply said, all but one justice, we're not going to change the standard despite these other concerns about inappropriate motivations of officers?
Well, I do think that Terry might come in and save my argument here, because Terry says you cannot inappropriately expand the scope or duration of a stop. By requesting that dog sniff without any basis to do so, that did expand the scope and duration of the stop. They had to wait for the dog to show up, and you can't.
Wasn't it about 20 minutes that they had to wait?
That's still an expansion of scope and duration. I would say 20 minutes is an unlawful expansion.
Well, it's not whether there was an expansion of duration. It's whether it was an unreasonable expansion of duration. And I mean, there are cases that talk about, well, you can't have somebody on the side of the road for 2 hours while you're trying to do your investigation. But I mean, just in the scheme of a regular traffic stop, it doesn't seem that 20 minutes is an unreasonable length of time.
Well, then turn to the scope. The scope, expanding the scope of that second stop to request that dog sniff. At that point, the scope changed, Terry violation. So I think Terry does come in at this point to give us some understanding of how to interpret that new case vis-a-vis the one before this court. So I see my time is almost up, and thank you very much. And thank you for explaining the new case today. Since I'm
and I didn't mean to surprise you. I literally get a notice on my computer when the decisions are released. So unfair advantage. My apologies.
No, I like surprises. It's all good. So thank you very much.
Whoops. Counsel for the state.
Well, thank you, Your Honors.
Pause for a second. I want to make sure Ms. Parsons is back on. Okay, she is.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Robert Yount, and I represent the state of Minnesota in today's oral argument. And this court should affirm the district court decision below because Deputy O'Connor had reasonable articulable suspicion, or RAS, at each investigative step on the evening of September 5th, 2017. And as we've already discussed, there were two canine searches, each tied to an independent traffic stop that evening. And the canine searches...
Can I jump in? Sorry, not everyone likes questions so early in the argument, but I do have a factual concern. I'm lost on... I saw that the district court found, I think in the district court's words, that the deputy had was aware of suspicions of drug activity in the defendant's house. I think the district court said dating back to 2015. And this was a stop that occurred, I think, in 2017. Do we know how recent the deputy's, the activity was that led to the deputy's suspicion?
Yes, Your Honor, and I actually did flag that to address. In the district court's order on page 8, it does, as Your Honor correctly point out, saying that they had suspicions dating back to 2015. So that would have been for about the 2 years prior to the search that happened on this night. But Deputy O'Connor testified at the omnibus hearing that this was a continuous suspicion that they knew that drugs were going in and out of the house. So he testified that as a countywide deputy, this was specifically one of five or six houses that at that time in September 2017, he was, quote, keeping his eyes on. So this was one of the houses that he and his other deputies.
So he was keeping his eyes on it. Well, that doesn't tell us anything about how recently the activity was that led him to suspect the house.
And then furthermore, Deputy O'Connor testified that earlier that year, I don't know the month, but in 2017, he had specifically arrested an individual coming from the 2102 Viking Boulevard residence. And that individual was the one who specifically identified Mr. Moyer, the appellant in this case, as being involved in the drug sale from where that individual got his methamphetamines. So you do have a current suspicion of the house being a known drug residence.
So let me raise my concern to you, and you can disabuse me of my trouble. So police officer has a suspicion, not based on any charges, but based upon what he's heard from individuals who've been stopped possessing drugs, that this individual is potentially a drug dealer. And he follows the person and stops the car. And the only basis for expanding the scope, as I understood it, is that that information that he stopped at a gas station and turned to go back home, and that the vehicle was not registered to him. Is there something more that is in the record that I'm missing that would support a claim of reasonable suspicion of drugs being found in the car at that time? And if so, and whether or not that's so, how is it that those circumstances would lead an officer to reasonably suspect, not that he's a drug dealer, but there are drugs in that car that a dog's going to alert onto?
Yes, Your Honor. And I want to tick through those that you mentioned because I think you got the entire list right, but I just want to confirm that. There was the 2102 Viking Boulevard address that he and other officers knew, or it was a known drug house. They knew that there were drugs that were going in and out of it based on their prior arrests. And while you were looking, I looked up that date as of July of 2017, that was the arrest that Deputy O'Connor made of the individual who specifically identified Moyer, Mr. Moyer, as being involved in the drug sale. So you have not stale information about a known drug house. Similarly, you have Moyer being a suspected drug dealer.
Wait a second. You said it's not stale. It was in July, and this is in September?
Yes, Your Honor.
Some might think of that as stale.
And to that, I would couple that together with Deputy O'Connor's testimony that was credible and undisputed, and the district court found is that at that point in time in September of 2017, this was one of the known drug cases that they were keeping their eye on.
Okay. So go on. You were going to elaborate on what the specific bases were for the reasonable suspicion. That's one of them. What are the next ones?
Yes, Your Honor. And then there was the one that you mentioned about Mr. Moyer being a suspected drug dealer based on all that information. It's similar, but not exactly the same. It's an independent factor that contributes to RAS being a suspected drug dealer. You also have the time of night. This is at 8:30 p.m., 8:45 p.m. Time of night at night is a relevant factor.
Well, time of night is a factor in drug dealing, but 8:30 at night is go on. I'm assuming you've got other evidence that might be more compelling than that.
Well, no, and I could appreciate Your Honor's point because, again, this is a totality of circumstances analysis. To Your Honor's point, if the only factor that we had is that there was a car driving.
If 8:30, if the time matters and 8:30 is indicative of drug dealing, then frankly, any time, day or night, would be indicative, wouldn't it?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor. According to the Uber decision that's cited in the brief, the time of night is a relevant factor that contributes to the RAS analysis.
But aren't the time of night cases generally cases dealing with activity like in the early morning hours, bar closed, 3 a.m., 4 a.m.? I mean, do you have any case that says time of night is a relevant consideration when the time is 8:30 p.m.?
And I'll concede that the case does not rise and fall on the fact that this happened at 8:30 p.m. In fact, to Your Honor's point, I think that it contributes more so to the second search that happened at 10:30 p.m. So there you're squarely in the evening hours.
Let me follow up on Judge Ross's questioning. So for the first stop, we have 2 months earlier, someone was arrested in the house and implicated Mr. Moyer in drug dealing. He's driving a car that's not registered to him. He goes to a gas station and does not get gas. But it's the record would indicate it's a convenience store. There would be many other reasons to go there. And then he returns to the house. And we're watching the house as a known drug house. Is that the totality of the circumstances that justified the first dog sniff?
In addition to the fact that the appellant also testified that, that the appellant also told him that he was on his way to running Aces that evening. And so stepping back from the individual points,
Pause for a second. And that suggests drugs in the car. How? He's running Aces. I assume that's a term referring to gambling at the casino.
Running Aces is the name of the casino. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's indicative of drugs being in the car. How?
Here's how. Is that at that moment in time, at about 8:30 p.m. that evening, here's what Deputy O'Connor testified that he believed. He saw a first car go to a gas station from a known drug house, return back to the known drug house. Then he saw a second different vehicle leave the drug house. He thought that he was going to find drugs that had been purchased or that were going to be sold in that vehicle that he stopped. That was his reasonable articulable suspicion. Now, he was wrong. That's not what happened. He didn't find it. But that doesn't mean that he didn't have RAS. It doesn't mean that he had...
Let me just tell you what troubles me. It seems like the state's position is that if the police suspect someone of dealing drugs, that they're a drug, not drug, dealing drugs at that time, but that this is a person who is known as a drug dealer, that if they go to the gas station and go back home in a car not registered to them, that's a base, that's reasonable suspicion to search the car or to detain the car longer for suspicion of drugs. It seems like that's all there is in, to your argument. And if it is, I will just tell you that I'm a bit troubled by that.
And I can Counsel, it might make sense for you to focus on your argument that even if the first dog sniff were illegal, the second dog sniff was not.
I will follow your lead, Your Honor. I do want to address that. So with regard to the exclusionary rule, and I want to focus again here on that the independent source doctrine allows that information and evidence that is discovered independent to a bad search is nevertheless admissible and allowable to consider for RAS, reasonable articulable suspicion purposes. And so if we look at the Nix v. Williams case, it's the interest in justice in deterring the unlawful police conduct that the police are put in the same, not a worse position that they would have been if that bad search had not occurred.
Okay, so if the bad search had not occurred, the officer wouldn't have known he was carrying the cash, and he wouldn't have known of the plans to meet a particular person at the casino. It sounds like he might have known he was going to the casino. I'm not sure where that's tied to the dog sniff. But could you tell us whether, in your view, the second dog sniff was constitutional if the police were not allowed to rely on the facts that Mr. Moya was carrying a large amount of cash and was planning to meet a particular person at the casino?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the state would concede that if the first search was unconstitutional, if this court concluded that was the case, then those two data points would be suppressed. But the suppression stops there at the moment that the appellant leaves that traffic stop. And the reason why that is because then at that point in time, an independent examination and observation occurred. The appellant went to the casino, and it's proven, and it should say that the record proves that it was independent, because at that point in time, Deputy O'Connor and the other deputies on this open line dispatch call, they started working with casino security to observe what was going on.
Let me make sure. I'd like you to break the chain that's going on in my mind. So the chain in my mind is stops the car, learns about that there's going to be a meetup at a casino with some guy, and he's got cash with him. And then the officer prompts the casino security to monitor the behavior of your client, and then therefore identify who this other guy is. And then there's a stop of the other guy. And based upon the stop of the other guy, they find drugs, which they use as a basis to expand the second stop of the defendant. Am I wrong in the chain?
I think you're right, Your Honor. That's the chain, is that they worked with casino security to observe with whom Mr. Moyer met at the casino.
If I'm right about the chain, doesn't the first stop, assuming it's unconstitutional, also render problematic the steps in the investigation as they learned about this guy from that first stop, and then they stopped that guy because they connected him to the defendant? Why isn't that part of the chain, and why isn't that also suppressible?
The reason is because at that point in time, at approximately 9 p.m. after appellant left that first traffic stop, that was a separate investigation. They didn't find any drugs in the vehicle. And you know, if this court finds that first search is constitutionally problematic, what happened then was an independent investigation. And I do want to address Your Honor's specific point about, okay, well, now you have this other guy that if you don't know that he's meeting Chuck is his name, Chuck Patterson. If they didn't know that he was meeting Chuck Patterson at the casino, isn't the fact that he met Chuck Patterson at the casino problematic? I think is maybe where Your Honor is going with that. And it's not, and here's why, because they acted suspiciously at the casino. The casino staff saw both of them enter the casino, meet, immediately go into the bathroom for a few minutes, then go back out to play high stakes poker, and then leave at the same time. So
Forgive me. What's suspicious about that? I mean, I understood they were suspicious because they heard from the deputies that they were suspicious. What is suspicious about two guys meeting at the casino, going to the restroom at the same time, and then leaving the casino at the same time?
What is suspicious is because even if this court finds that the first search is constitutionally problematic, that still doesn't erase the knowledge that Deputy O'Connor had before 8:30 p.m. when he implemented the traffic stop. So he still knows that Mr. Moyer is a suspected drug dealer leaving a known drug house at night, going to a casino where, in his experience and training that he has received specific and particularized training on, he knows that drug dealers and drug traffickers throughout Anoka County use the casino as a place to sell and purchase drugs.
Can you clarify, when did the officer know he was going to the casino? And did he know that before he looked at the phone to see the meeting?
Yes, Your Honor. I have the pin sites here. On transcript pages 24 and 43, he clarifies that he learned that he was not the registered owner of the vehicle and that he was going to the casino before requesting the canine search. And I do see that my time is briefly ending here. And I do want to briefly respond to the argument raised saying that
you say before requesting the canine search, but had he already completed his business with the driving over the fog line? I mean, the question is the expansion of the stop includes additional questioning about where you're going, which has nothing to do with the fog line investigation. And it's not just the dog sniff, right?
I would disagree with Your Honor. I would say that basic biographical questions about performing a traffic stop, about where you're heading, where you're going, that he did not ask about narcotics in that. You can watch it, or you cannot watch in the video, but according to the testimony, he did not ask about narcotics. He did not ask if he had drugs or anything illegal in the vehicle. These are basic biographical questions. And I do want to just, I see my time is up, but briefly say that the same thing happened in the second stop. Is that when he approached the vehicle in the second stop, he didn't ask if there were drugs in there. He didn't expand the scope of the search until the canine search happened at that second stop. And so for constitutional purposes, the court's analysis should focus on working back from the actual time that the canine sniff occurred. That is the point in time where he needed reasonable articulable suspicion to perform the search. So unless the court has any further questions, we ask the court to affirm the district court below. Thank you.
And it doesn't appear as if any of the other panel members has any other questions for you. I see none. So thank you. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you'd like to use that.
Hi, thank you, Your Honors. Very much appreciate it. You know, having listened to that, the respondent's argument, I don't have any further points to make at this juncture. If you have any follow-up questions, I'd be extremely happy to answer them at this time. Yes, Judge Larkin.
Is there any constitutional problem with the officer after the first stop, having learned from Mr. Moyer, if the record shows us, before the dog sniff, that he was going to the casino? Is there any problem with the officer calling the casino, asking the casino to monitor him?
That is not an issue that I researched. Constitutionally, I don't think it's necessarily a problem as he was there. It was a public place.
Can I ask you this, just based on your recollection of the record, if you know, and if not, we can look at and determine it. How did I'm a little confused by the representation that the officer knew Mr. Moyer was traveling to the casino independently of looking at his phone. Or was there a conversation after the stop?
As I reviewed this transcript during Mr. Yoon's argument, I did see that he had the conversation about running aces before the expansion of that first stop.
I just thought it was a little unusual because it sounds like he left the house, went to the gas station, then he's on his way from the gas station back to the house. So I just sort of wonder, why would he be saying he's going to Running Aces if he was stopped going back to the house? That's why I'm confused.
Oh, no, no, no. I think the confusion comes that there was a different vehicle that went to the gas station.
Oh, that's right. And was left.
And then Mr. Moyer left.
You're right.
Yeah. So that's where the running aces came out.
He was stopped leaving the house, having returned from. I forgot that piece. Thank you.
So can you clarify for me, and since your memory is fresh from looking at the transcript, about the running aces. So he indicates to the officer that he's going to the casino. Does he indicate that he's going to meet someone at the casino, or is that information gleaned only from the cell phone?
That is information only gleaned from the cell phone, at least according to the transcript. So there was a conversation. He was heading to Running Aces. The meeting someone was only a product of that cell phone search, or not a cell phone search, but when he was searching, picked up the cell phone to examine it and the text came in. Well, thank you very much, Your Honors, for this opportunity to argue. Zoom is an interesting format, but I get to sit for it, so that's nice. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you to both counsel for your argument today and your briefing. The matter is submitted.